Ahoy, Vachon. How's the French say, Vachon? This is the Brown Briefly, where less is more, more or less, coming to you live over KVSH 101.9 FM, Voice of Vachon, your island connection. Please make us part of your day. And be advised that our assertions and views, which can modestly be described as progressive persuasion, do not in any way reflect the opinions of KVSH or Voice of Vachon.
That was the voice of Brian Brown, creator of the Brown Briefly. Every week we try to live up to his high standards of hosting a discussion of current events laced with empathy, intelligence, humor, and progressive persuasion. Brian's concept of less is more, more or less, always left us wanting more. Hey, let's just jump right into it with our friends old and new. Sitting next to me in the Gene Bosch broadcast studio in downtown Vachon is my friend, flight instructor, Vachon Airport Commissioner, West Texas Roughneck, Eastern Montana band member, former Army Intelligence Officer, and fellow treetop flyer, Truman O'Brien. How you doing, Truman?
Hey, good morning. This is getting worse every time. I'm not sure where this is going to end up.
Yeah, I could add add a new line every time.
Yeah, I'm afraid of that.
We're also joined via Zoom by defender of democracy, Kevin Jones of Indivisible Vachon and the Vachon Climate Action Group, who collectively strive to create a livable planet overseen by a government we can all appreciate or at least tolerate. How are you today?
I'm good. I'm good. And my tolerance for local state government is going up. So that's good news. The trends are good.
Well, that's good. Any good news is good. Yeah. We're not joined today again by Bruce Hallman, the noted historian extraordinaire. He is still in the Southern Hemisphere. He will be joining us next week. At least that's the plan. So it'll be good to see him back.
Oh, he will be back?
He'll be on.
Because I have to make an announcement that I won't be next week.
Okay. So I'm going to be engineering?
Yes, sir.
Well, then nobody may be on.
I have the ultimate confidence in you.
Oh, good. That's a good thing. This week, our special small talk guest is Lennon Bronsema, Washington Conservation Action Vice President of Campaigns, who will discuss how the legislative session works. Welcome back, Lennon. How you doing?
Doing great. Happy to be here.
Good.
Thanks for having me.
Good. I like your virtual background there, Washington Conservation Action. Unless you've got a big banner right behind you, we're looking at Lennon on Zoom. So.
Got to be on brand.
There you go. Know.
And how about you, Craig Bellis?
Well, you know, mine is a voice of Craig Bellis, former tow truck driver, guardian of Pan American's first 747, women's shoe salesman, constitutional law professor, Fulbright scholar, and aspiring weather balloon captain. I'm doing just fine. Still trying to figure out how those balloons navigate. I guess they just pick the right altitude for wind.
That's it.
Yeah. Let's pause for a moment to find out what everyone's been up to during the past week. Truman, have you been injuring yourself?
No, for once I'm injury free. No, but listen, I have to tell you, I just had a wonderful time on Sunday. Some very old friends of mine came out and had brunch with us. One of the gentlemen was my very first flight student. From I think about 1979, we were trying to remember if that was the date, but and he and I actually owned an airplane together years and years ago. Anyway,
when I heard that you were his instructor, I asked whether or not he ever became a pilot.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, he did. He did. It took him a little while. Here's the interesting thing about Bill, though. He went to work for Boeing. Sorry, Kevin. It happens. But he went to work for Boeing, and he said he was going to work for them for 2 years just to pay for his flying lessons, and then he was going to, you know, pursue aviation, right? 39 and a half years is how long you put in with Boeing.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
You could be talking about me.
Yeah, there you go.
Well, we are going to talk about you, Kevin. What are you going to do
next?
Week?
Well, things are going well. Like I say, my tolerance for local government's improving. First of all, the Vashon Mori Environment and Climate Agenda, which passed unanimously at the Community Council, has now been sent, courtesy of the John and Diane at the, the council, have sent that on to our legislators. And two of them have come back and said, thank you so much for letting us know. We will be keeping this in mind as we continue in the legislative session. And the good news, the other good news, is that within that agenda, which had 12 specific pieces of legislation that Vashon Mori environment and climate groups are striving to pass, 9 of those 12 bills are still moving forward through the system. So I'm counting that as being good news.
Boy, lots of good news. That's great. Lennon, what have you been up to the last week?
I have been getting ready for some travel, which is exciting. Since the pandemic, I have not left the Puget Sound, and I'm real excited. Headed up to Vancouver to listen to Raffi, the children's artist, is doing a performance with my family. And then I'm going to go to the other Washington, fly out to D.C. and do some good lobbying for my organization, but also some entities here on the island. So thrilled to go.
That's great. Thank you very much. By the way, how old is Raffi? Do you know? Seems like he's been around for quite some time.
He's been around. He's in his 70s, I believe.
Oh, okay. He's not old.
I saw he was in Seattle, I don't know, 4 years ago, and I went to performance. I'm a big Raffi fan growing up.
Yeah.
At the peak Raffi moment.
Right.
He can, you know, turn it out, still can play very, very well. But, you know, they're children's songs. So
yeah. Yeah. Well, he's great. He's like the best of that genre.
Mm-hmm.
Me, what have I been up to? Went bowling. I went to a party bowling in West Seattle. I was thinking about the times. I used to be in a bowling league when I was in, I think, sixth or seventh grade, and had a 106 average.
Wow.
That's
amazing.
It's not bad for a kid.
For a six-year-old, yeah.
Yeah, fifth or sixth grade, not six-year-old.
Oh, sorry.
No,
I got it.
No. And I recalled with great pride the time I bowled here on Vashon when we had the wonderful bowling alley, which I wish we still had. That's one of those things they take out just as it becomes popular, you know. I hadn't bowled probably in 20 years.
Oh my gosh!
And I got on the alley and I rolled about a 255.
Whoa!
Somebody had taken over my body.
You were unconscious.
It was a holographic experience of some sort. And then the next time I barely made my average of 106. You know.
So, Craig, were you there at West Seattle Bowl?
We were. We were at West Seattle Bowl with all the psychedelic alleys lit up and everything. It's wild.
So just like two blocks northeast of the junction? Right there behind
Trader Joe's, kind of.
Yeah, so I nearly grew up in West Seattle Bowl.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I don't know.
Were you a pinstripe?
Yeah, on the east. My parents met either through ice skating or bowling. I'm not sure, maybe both. My grandfather owned multiple bowling alleys in Eastern Washington.
Really?
So bowling in our family was big. And I, as a kid, remember there was a barber shop, and maybe still there. I haven't been up to look. But on the east side of the building, unless they've remodeled, there's a big window, which is like, I don't know, 4 by 6 feet, maybe. I was a kid, so maybe it's only, you know, 2 by 3. But yeah, that was where the barber was. And I remember he had dull scissors because my hair would get pinched every time. But yeah, I spent a lot of time in West Seattle Bowl. My childhood home was just like 5 blocks north, right up the street from West Seattle.
Well, that's very interesting.
There you go.
That bowling alley's been around for a while. No offense.
So have I. Yeah.
But they've obviously updated it. It is all, you know, like artificial intelligence. The lights on the alley follow your ball, especially if it's headed for the gutter. You know, it's amazing. My wife had trouble actually. She bowled pretty well, but she had trouble because at one point there were little ducks. swimming in a river all the way down the bowling alley, and she didn't want to roll the ball right down the middle.
Over the ducks.
I guess I got to go back.
Yeah,
you do.
They say you never can go back. But.
All right, I just have one quick bowling story, and that was when I was in Europe in the Army. Every Friday, we started a league, and every Friday afternoon, we would knock off work and go bowling. Well, nobody really liked to bowl that much, but we liked drinking beer and we liked harassing all our superiors about their terrible job of bowling. So that was our big outing for the week.
Sounds like great fun.
Yeah, it was, actually.
Good thing you didn't get court-martialed.
Indeed.
All right, today in history. Today is February 28th. It's the 59th day of the year. So 306 days remain until New Year's. There are 136 days left before we reach the warm, sunny days of Strawberry Festival.
Counting down.
That's right. And 300 days until Christmas. So mark your calendars. On this date in 1983, the final episode of MASH aired with almost 106 million viewers. It still holds the record for the highest viewership of a season finale. And a dilly of a finale it was. I watched it live. Back in the days when you had three channels.
Yeah.
In 2001, the Nisqually earthquake occurred today.
Oh, boy.
Having a moment magnitude of 6.8 with the epicenter in southern Puget Sound. I was in my office in Pioneer Square with a big giant window behind me, and I was talking on the phone to my broker. And I said, excuse me, I got to get under my desk. And I got under just in time before the whole window crashed in on top of it. So, and this was old glass. This was not safety glass. that was a wild one. Today is National Chocolate Souffle Day, National Pancake Day, National Public Sleeping Day.
Sorry.
And National Science Day.
You know, the first three of those could like go together. Chocolate souffle on pancakes and then take a nap.
There you go. There you go.
Yeah.
All right. Let's get right into the small talk now that we've run through the ridiculous. We'll now move on to the sublime. The Washington State legislative session is in full swing and nearly half over. Lennon Bronsema, Washington Conservation Action's vice president of campaigns, is here to tell us how the legislative session works. That almost sounds like a setup to a joke. Thank you, Leonard, for joining us on Small Talk. How you doing?
Doing well.
Good.
Doing well. And making it through session, as we just shorten it, so you don't have to say legislative. It's just session.
Okay. And, I was going to say, that's a mouthful every time. Yeah, every time you say it. We appreciate you being here. You have been here before. Since we spoke last, the Washington Conservation Voters and Washington Environmental Council have merged into a single organization, Washington Conservation Action. Tell us what prompted that change and what the organization hopes to achieve under this new combined organizational structure.
Thanks, Craig. We've been operating as two individual organizations for almost 50 years and a very shared mission and goals and confusion or eliminating confusion, I should say, is what prompted the change. As we've become more and more unified in our work and our goals, introducing yourselves as session's a good example. If you go down to a legislator and say, hi, I'm so-and-so conservation voters. And then a couple of days later, a colleague comes in and says, hi, I'm with Environmental Council. It's confusing that you don't know it's the same thing. So we have been under a process for about 5 years to really get to this point of one unified brand, Washington Conservation Action. And the hope is that it makes the movement stronger and more unified in making sure folks know what we need out of our political system to move the environmental issues of the day forward.
That's a good idea. Branding, if you will.
Yes.
Just to make it clearer. I mean, we run into that on the Voice of Vashon. Are you an AM station, an FM station, a television station, mm-hmm. an emergency, you know,
emergency alert
station? What? You know, so mm-hmm. it does help to eliminate that confusion, and I'm sure hopefully it'll make you even more effective than you already are. Speaking of becoming more effective, you have been watching the current legislative session,
yes,
quite closely, I'm sure, and supporting various kinds of legislation. What have been some of your top priorities this session?
Yeah, so for listeners to understand, so the legislature, you know, what they're doing down there is they're trying to come up with a budget to govern our state. And the bills, the pieces of law that they're trying to push, some have an impact on the budget and some don't. And so we've been watching both the process of just the laws without budget impacts and then the budget process itself. Tied to the budget, we're striving to make sure we have investments in salmon habitat to restore that food source for not only the animals, but the people that need it. And then investing in climate action as well. We, over the last few years, have had some success in our state passing different climate policies and setting up a market for pollution. And so the money that's generated there, where does it get invested in the budget? What does it actually fund? So we're watching that. And then there's some issues that the legislature can take to help us, you know, have a better future here. And one is planning for the climate impacts. And how can we put plans in place now to prepare so it doesn't just hit us all at once? And then making producers of packaging pay for its cleanup. There's a bill called the WRAP Act, Recycling and Processing Act, Packaging Act, to do much like we do with computers, where if you buy a new computer, you can return the old one and they'll recycle it. Well, we should be able to do that with all these pieces, particularly plastic that's produced, that is not on the state, the local government, Kevin, to fund those, you know, that disposal, but it's on the people producing it.
Well, you know, a lot of people have the question about how do you do this? You run down to Olympia and knock on doors? How do you move something? I used to be an assistant attorney general and represented the universities and colleges, and we would actually sort of not lobby, but kind of lobby for certain things. And it can at times be a rather complicated process. How do you move the legislature?
Yeah, that's why it's so great to be a part of an organization, and why listeners should join us or join others, so that you have the full resources to make an impact. So it starts early. It matters who we get elected, of course, who is in there to listen and try to make decisions. So that's one component. Well before the legislative session, is like you have to vote and get the right people in. And then it's about conversations and figuring out what people need to make the system work for everyone. And so we do that, as you described, right? We just go knock on doors. We also have a team of lobbyists and network with other environmental groups and allied organizations that have lobbyists whose expertise is in how to talk to folks about the intricacies of the policy and how it has impacts across the state. And then probably our biggest and most, somewhat effective thing is our lobby days, where we bring hundreds of people now virtually, right to the doorsteps of their legislators to talk about the impacts of the policy and why it needs to be passed, all while keeping in mind the countdown clock of session. Yes, Kevin.
So, Len and I attended lobby days a few years ago, back when people converged on the Capitol and had meetings. I was really impressed with the number of constituents who showed up. How many people are involved in lobby days today, and how did it go this year?
We had over 400 people this year from every single legislative district engaged. The wonderful thing about Zoom is that it removed the barrier for someone from OMAC to show up in Olympia on a certain day and talk. And so we've had been on more participation, and we follow that virtual time up with weeks of in-person meetings where, you know, really drive the act home. But, you know, it's not just us that does lobby days. They happen all around. If there's an issue you care about, there's probably an organization that's organizing an event to have lobbying. Yeah.
I had one thing that I wanted to say that I think is absolutely wonderful, one of the things that you said, and that is you're talking about planning for climate change. I have some, as these guys know, I have some very conservative friends that have, you know, live in other parts of the country. And you know, many of them are climate change or climate deniers, you know, like, oh, those, you know, it's just a natural phenomenon, blah, blah, blah. And one of the things that I always say to them is, you know, I don't know if we can affect any change or not, but the thing that we must do is plan for it because it is happening. And if we don't plan ahead, we're going to be really in a bad spot. And you look at the military is planning right now for their marine facilities or their naval facilities, all of those places, they're planning on sea level rise. I mean, they have to, you know. So anyway, I really appreciate your taking that approach.
Yeah, and it is happening, and people have to be planning. And the function of government is to, well, one of the functions I tend to believe is to help the people that, you know, can't just do it themselves, right? We're collectively doing it. But here in Washington, on the coast, you know, whole Native tribes are having to move their villages up off the coast because it's going to be flooded. And, you know, down in Florida, you see this along the panhandle, right? The entirety of roads covered up just with a high tide. Oh, and yeah, that's not even with the actual sea rise.
Well, right here on Vashon.
You have to plan. Mm-hmm. Right here too. Absolutely. Yeah. And a lot of the infrastructure that hasn't been invested in over the decades, now we have an opportunity to fix that, not only with Washington's Climate Commitment Act and the money that's generating, but also the federal government's infrastructure to Build Back Better money. Yeah, Kevin.
Yeah, you know, it's hard to see, right, that sea level rise. This is one of the challenges that I've been exposed to as a climate activist myself, is that we only have our lived experience if we don't pay attention to history. You know, we don't know that, you know, the people born in the last decade don't know that when I was a kid, you know, this kind of sunny weather in February was pretty rare. And we had more snow on the ground back when I was a kid. But the idea that sea level rise, this was queued up in the script for our last show, but we didn't get to it, is that there's an estimated $237 billion of the housing market that's overvalued because of the risk of sea level rise will reduce that property value potentially to zero, right, as the sea level rises. And that's about 1% of the U.S. gross domestic product. So that's a huge number. And many feel that that's conservative, that it's bigger than that. You know, we don't know how quickly, but climate scientists that I listen to are saying, you know, climate change is happening at a more rapid rate than they initially projected. So we'll see. We'll see how it goes.
Yeah. So we have to plan for it there. And then, you know, there's also sort of the fun side of it. Like, I know some of you are car guys. I like cars. You know, if we're actually getting all these electric vehicles, which more and more people are buying, right, we need the infrastructure to charge, right? Where do those go? Where are they placed? That's infrastructure. And that is, you know, a way of, you know, addressing a harm to the environment, right? Putting this infrastructure in. And how do we generate that electricity? It's a long chain of events, right? But it can lead to us having really fast 0 to 60 cars and a lot of fun with it.
Yeah. Let me ask you another related question, and one that you probably get pushback on from time to time. It has to do with what the individual can do on their own. We have the single plastic use free representative here last, I guess that was last week. Mm-hmm. If not last week, the week before. And the and I remember I brought that up with somebody here the other day. I was at their house, and in their own house, I probably shouldn't have given them hassle about it. But we were opening up a Costco plastic container thing that I needed a chainsaw to get into for this tiny little, I don't know, it was like, you know, chapstick or something that was in there. And I said, oh, geez, that's just, it's really sad that that happens. And they said, oh, there's nothing that I can do on an individual basis that's going to make any difference whatsoever. Why should I even bother? Why should they bother?
Yeah,
I didn't prepare you for that question.
No, I'm just trying to think for our listeners of the best way to characterize it. I mean, individual actions add up. And if we're all working towards, you know, reducing, reusing, that does make a difference. Is less material being used up to make something else. But you can't achieve what we need to do just by a bunch of people reusing their cup. We need to make big drastic changes, and government and corporations need to be involved in those actions, because when Amazon decides to make their cardboard box 1% thinner, that's going to save a billion, that's probably not the scientific number, but a whole lot more cardboard, right, than I can personally save in a year. But we didn't need to demand that as the consumer, and we need to make the government, our collective government, you know, ask that of corporations that are using our systems to deliver their products and make their money.
Right. That brings me back to a question that I was going to ask earlier. Earlier, when you were first speaking, you said something about getting money from recycling or something. I didn't quite follow what you were talking about. And can you explain what that was?
Oh, so there's currently we passed a law in the early 90s, electronic recycling, where instead of you just throwing away your old computer, right?
It was before that. You said something about what you're...
Oh, the Climate Commitment Act. That's what I said. A couple of years ago, we passed the Climate Commitment Act, which set up a system of creating companies in Washington to be able to purchase pollution credits, if you will, that we, to achieve our climate goals, we have to ratchet down our emissions every year. Some industries, that's really hard to do in, you need to buy credits. And that creates revenue for the state to invest in other ag things. And it's a big discussion of where do you invest that?
Okay. That makes sense.
Kevin?
Yeah, I was in a meeting this morning, and I thought that I heard that those auctions of those credits, you know, for companies who have a hard time cutting their climate pollution, you know, they can buy that. I hear that's starting up this week or very near term. And so yes. I understand that could go to, you know, climate investments that we can make in the state.
Yeah. And we're one of the few states in the country that has this. And we're like we do a lot in Washington on everything, we're leading. And whether it's aerospace or computers or, you know, figuring out how we tackle pollution, it's a cool state to be a part of, because we seem to do a lot of things well.
So I'm catching up here, guys. Sorry, I'm a little slow. But as I understand it, then what happens is a company that has trouble cutting their carbon emissions or whatever, there's another company that it can do it more easily. And so they are able to sell those credits? Is that the idea? I mean, so that the overall impact is to reduce it, but it takes the burden off of higher producers. Is that correct? Do I understand that right?
Yeah, we could probably do a whole show on it. The actual mechanism, though, ratchets down every year. So there's less and less of these credits as time goes on.
Oh, okay.
Everyone has to clean up and figure out how to do these things in a more sustainable, friendly way.
Okay.
I don't want to get into all the details.
That's fine. I just wanted to get the idea.
Share in the show notes, maybe some good resources.
Yeah. Okay. Kevin.
There you go. Hey, I just wanted to go back briefly to the notion of what can individuals do to help. and we were focused on plastic packaging and so on. I'd like to bring up electricity use because, and I'm sure, Lennon knows this, I've been involved with Puget Sound Energy's power planning. And part of the challenge the utility has is they want to, they're required to meet peak demand, right? In the wintertime when it's cold, in the summertime when people have their air conditioning running, people need that, we expect to have power. It's essential. It's a, it's a life-saving commodity at that point. The other thing, given that, so we are responsible as consumers for how big those peaks go, right? How much demand we place on the system when it's cold or when it's hot. The thing that is also surprising to me was how much electricity is consumed by lighting, light bulbs. And now LED lights are on the market all over the place. The prices have come down. Susie and I just went through our house and probably found 30 or 40 light fixtures that were still incandescent that when PSE came out to do a home energy audit, they didn't have the replacement bulbs to get rid of those. So, you can really make a marked difference in just how you change your lighting. And collectively, what happens is if we can reduce my individual peak demand, collectively, we can reduce the peak demand across the whole system. And that means Puget Sound Energy doesn't have to build another gas burning power plant, for example. So those are some of the things that we can do collectively when individuals take action.
And more selfishly, you can reduce your electric bill.
Yeah,
that's right.
Pay some dividends.
That's right. Hey, now that you've wet our whistle, Lennon, obviously the legislative process is a giant cog in this process of trying to preserve the environment. And how can the individual, how can a Vashonite get more involved in the legislative process?
Well, I think from the comfort of the island, probably the best thing you could do is I'm trying to think of the right approach here. I'm just going to sell my own stuff, I guess. So Washington Conservation Action, we've got this great bill tracker. If you go to a website, evergreenfuture.org, you can see this bill tracker and you can look and see what all the bills that matter about the environment are and how they're doing. And if you find one you care about, you can contact us and we can work with you to become an advocate on that bill. So that's evergreenfuture.org to see the bills alive. If there's one that you already know about and are passionate about, connecting with other like-minded people who are doing this work, there's a power in the collective. And so working towards that. Obviously, Kevin here is a great collaborator and instigator of action down in the legislature, but our organization as well. And then, all the groups you would think of, like who's involved in politics, right? League of Women Voters, if you want to be nonpartisan about it, if you want to be partisan, contacting your direct, the party itself. That the most important thing, though, is show up. What often happens is something doesn't pass and you ask a legislator, well, what happened? Why didn't you move forward? We didn't hear from anyone. We only heard from the same people we always hear from. And it seems in these times sort of not believable that five more voices could make a difference, that somehow you would need to generate a million comments or, they need a march to understand what's happening. But there is so many ideas, bills being put forward. Five more than anything else has. And so reaching out and making sure your voice is heard is probably the most important thing to be done. There's a couple times coming up here in the session. March 8th is when all the bills have to come out of their respective house of origin. So if a piece of legislation started in the House, it has to be over to the Senate by March 8th. If not, it will no longer exist. And April 23rd is the last day of session. And so we really have a month and a half here to see what we can do on a whole host of issues to get us ready for the coming year. Kevin?
Yeah, and I do want to shout out again what you mentioned, Evergreen Future. I believe that's evergreenfuture.org.
Yes.
For folks who want to go online. And I really like what you said, Lennon, about people who want to spend some of their time working with others to create those policy messages and work in community, right, to get that information out. I will say that we on the Indivisible groups use that website and the others you mentioned, and we create actions, and our listeners get ready with your pencils. bit.ly/join-tan-today is a place that you can see those actions arrive in your inbox. So it's bit.ly/, this is all capital letters now, join TAN today, no spacing. TAN is Take Action Network. So people are interested, go check that out. And you're going to see some of those same campaign goals and objectives that Lennon is mentioning show up through Take Action Network. So lots of ways to get information.
I have the website pulled up here at the station right now. And when I'm looking at the legislative bill tracker, I see the bill title. And of course, you can click on that to get a full read of the bill, I assume. And the position, this is the position of the climate action or the Washington Conservation Action. Is that your position?
Yeah, that's the position. Yeah, that's the, it's sort of the environmental, broadly, you could assume it's the broad environmental. Okay. Pro-environment position.
Okay, and then I see bill status, alive or dead. And then the things that it affects, like to act on climate, clean water, healthy forests, and so on. So those things are selected by you folks to say what this bill pertains to?
Yes, exactly. So the broad category of environment that it would fall under, public health, corporate accountability.
Right, okay.
Before we move on, I wanted to reemphasize one other thing that you had indicated, both you and Kevin, about how it doesn't take many people to gain the attention of legislators at either the state level, the county level, whatever the case may be. And that's where our community council comes in and is very important. The fact that the community council can put together policy statements, position statements, whatever the case may be, that's looked at seriously by the county and by the state. You don't need 100 people in a hearing room in order to really move people. I've often said I've gone to King County Council meetings where there were significant issues and there were a dozen people there out of all of King County to speak to an issue. And the people who showed up made a difference. So with that, Lennon, is there anything else that you want to that you wanted to emphasize or tell us that we haven't touched upon?
I'll just remind the folks of Vashon that while we might be, you know, a small island on the map, the policies and the ideas that we put forward like have a tremendously large impact in Washington State. Ideas that came out of the legislative district you were all in, the 34th, have not only been made into law, but, you know, have been critical to the conversations at the national and the federal level of climate policy and this big infrastructure bill that we've put forth. You can draw a line between some of the stuff that we've experimented with in our state and like what happened at the national level. So you can make a huge difference by just stepping forward, getting involved a little bit. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you. You know, we're going to move on to our last segment, and you, of course, are very welcome to stay, listen, or chime in. We occasionally are accused of engaged in a little bit of partisan politics, so if you feel like you have to be careful in that regard, do what's right for you and the organization. But thank you again, Lennon, for coming back and telling us what's going on.
Yeah.
There's a number of topics, and we could spend several shows talking about these. One that caught my attention was the Vashon Healthcare District. We've had the Healthcare District, and we've had representatives from CMAR on the Brown Briefly talking about their plans or tentative plans. Recently, there was a Beachcomber article that talked about the healthcare district asking islanders to help define Vashon's most pressing unmet healthcare needs. They're trying to reimagine its role. The district is trying to reimagine its role on Vashon following CMAR Community Healthcare's decision to sever its relationship with the district and build its own healthcare clinic. They haven't totally severed because the healthcare district remains the landlord for the CMAR until they build the new facility here right almost in back of our studio. And some of the pressing needs they talked about were possibly urgent care, drug and alcohol treatment, mental health treatment, suicide prevention, domestic violence, at-home care for seniors, as the kinds of things that the district might want to address. And, of course, there are individuals who would say, no, the healthcare district should fold up shop and go home and not be taxing us. Any thoughts on that, gentlemen? Truman?
Yeah, of course. It just rang my bell, buddy. No, you know, we formed the healthcare district and approved their funding in order to ensure that we kept a clinic here on the island. And it strikes me that, I mean, I still see a need for a healthcare district. But I'm not sure I see a need for the extent to which we're being taxed for this particular entity. And I'm really wondering, I mean, I think it's imperative that they decide what their new mission is going to be so that we can absolutely determine what kind of funding is going to be required. I mean, I certainly don't see us needing a million plus dollars for an urgent care facility, unless we build a facility, which is not going to happen, or drug and alcohol. Anyway, it just seems that they need to really refine their mission and come up with a budget for that particular mission.
Yeah, none of us want them to be in a position where they have this particular percentage of property tax that they're entitled to, and then spend the money. You want to find out what you need and then determine how much money
exactly,
you need
exactly.
to do that rather than the other way around. Right. It may be the same.
Well, the problem is that it does impact our other taxing districts. I mean, that's the Park District and our roads and all this other stuff. It all goes in that same pot. And there's only so much to go around. I mean, it's, what is it, the $5.19 or whatever that limit is, that the maximum that junior taxing districts can take. So they really need to define what they're going to do and come up with a budget. So
right, Kevin, did you have your hand up?
Yeah, I think it's an interesting dilemma because, you know, the way the whole issue was framed when we were called to vote for a hospital district is that we'd been left in the lurch on numerous occasions with healthcare. And so it was sort of an assumption that to keep a viable healthcare service here on the island, you know, we needed to pony up. And now CMAR has decided that that's no longer true for whatever reason. Who knows what magic is happening on their books. But I totally say that if they can be self-sustaining, that's awesome. I also wonder if they might fail in that objective, and therefore we're going to need a pool of funds to come in and rescue from, you know, the same problem we've had on multiple occasions. Despite all of that, you know, that uncertainty, I agree that it's very important to understand what the needs are. And I really, what I see in the hospital district and the commissioners right now is they seem to be pretty agile and definitely thinking along those lines of, we need to understand how what services are required. And then the voters can decide, you know, is that a service that's money well spent? The last thing I'll say on that regard is King County does, I think, an annual needs survey. And some of the entries from the last one are things like, you know, we do not have a full-time, we don't have any social workers on the island. I know we have a lot of service organizations. We talked about the Vashon Social Services Network some time ago, a show or two ago. But, you know, some of the information on these needs assessment says we really do have a dearth of healthcare providers in certain areas. So hopefully all of that information can come together and give us a clearer picture of what we think the community's needs are.
Right, right. Let me move on. Excuse me, go ahead.
I just wanted to, I guess, build off that. And I think it would be great in this conversation that the district has of thinking exactly what does healthcare mean? Broader than just can we get our x-ray done or medicine prescription filled. There are from the infant side of thing, before being even born, through all the way to the end. There is a whole gamut of services that larger communities may have access to, and we don't on the island. And is there a way for the healthcare district to play a role in that so that people can live their best life?
Yeah, that's a good reminder. Absolutely. We kind of think of ourselves as a fairly self-sufficient populist group. But at the same time, why discard needs that will make it a better community and a healthier community? Exactly. But it does require some transparency and some research, and that's what it sounds like the health district is doing. Kevin, did you have another comment?
Yeah, I also know that I was directed by the consulting nurse at my healthcare organization to go into urgent care I think it was a weekend ago. And my understanding is that capability doesn't exist on Vashon. It was not a particularly urgent thing. When you call in and you talk about the symptoms you're experiencing, they're going to pretty much say, come on in, because it's hard to tell over the phone, what's really going on with you. But what happens in this case is what could have been probably a half hour visit to a local facility that had urgent care turned into a 5-hour trip, taking the boat, into town. Yeah. So I think that the folks who are urging the healthcare to close shop are, I assume, making the assumption that everybody's healthcare needs are met in the most effective way. I don't believe that's probably true, but it's important for us to understand. If that is true, then that's fantastic. And then maybe the hospital district can close its doors and claim success.
Yeah.
Right now, I think we got a ways to go.
I don't think everybody should subscribe to my mother's philosophy, which was you don't go to the doctor unless you've severed an arm. That's asking an awful lot of everyone. I wanted to move on to another topic that I didn't put on my list of potential topics: Delbert Gate.
Delbert Gate.
And Scott Adams, the cartoonist who made some rather remarkable statements here recently that blacks are a hate group and whites should stay away from blacks generally. What do you think the future of Delbert is, Kevin?
Yeah, it's not funny anymore, Scott.
That's right.
Yeah. Oh, although Scott is accusing everyone of engaging in cancel culture. He's being canceled because of he's exercising his free speech rights. Any thoughts? Any reactions? Got a knee-jerk reaction there, Truman?
Yeah, of course. You know me. I really have problems with... I guess with the whole cancel culture thing. I mean, wanting to rewrite our literature, wanting to, some of the things that have been coming out of that, I kind of go, you kind of got to accept what's there, I don't know. What is it? Was the Roald Dahl gentleman who wrote the children's books. I'm blank right now. But anyway, they're wanting to rewrite some of his things, and it's like, come on, folks. You have to accept.
I'm going
to
ask you to quit while you're ahead there, Truman.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah. I was just
going to say, Truman, I'm glad that you don't support Ron DeSantis' education.
Oh, God, are you kidding me?
but the the thing that I see is that we're seeing more and more laws, and Craig, you can certainly comment on this much more capably than I can, that give corporations a lot of rights in terms of who they support, what they do. In this case, I think a corporation has the right to decide whether or not they want to promote the product of somebody who is espousing, hurtful and harmful commentary in the community. And while, Dilbert cartoons don't necessarily carry that message, the cartoonist certainly has lately. So it's of course one of these other interesting dilemmas, where do you draw the line? I would say that if people want to pursue Scott Adams' work, they can probably find it online. I'm personally happy the Seattle Times has decided to not support folks who go publicly and make comments that don't allow our community to come together in a supportive way. So,
Hold on for a second, Truman. I think that you hit on a really important point. Cultural standards is what we're talking about. Mm-hmm. If the culture says that murder is inappropriate and you're put in jail, that's not cancel culture.
No.
I mean, that is a form of you're being canceled. Yeah, yeah. You are totally being canceled. Yeah. And then the line moves to civil liability. You trespass on somebody's property. Oh, you're canceling me by making me pay for. And then you get into the whole issue of engaging in, if I use the phrase, racist tropes. Or cliches, or things that further misunderstanding and not only misunderstanding but horrible pain to entirely certain cultural groups. If you're I'm not going to have that person in my newspaper anymore. Is that cancel culture?
I think it's finally getting a little clear into my little feeble brain here. The difference is when a corporation or a company or an individual says, I don't accept that anymore and I'm not going to participate in that, that is a very different thing than from the government saying, I don't agree with what your philosophy is, like Disney and DeSantis. I think that's a very different thing. And that's where I have a problem, is with the government saying that. If a company says, hey, I don't want to support you anymore because I don't agree with what you said, that's perfectly within their right, and they should do that.
And you're perfectly entitled to your opinion.
Thank you. No, but I mean... But
no, I understand the distinction you're making.
Yeah, it's the other way around. I mean, if the government, our government says, no, you can't do that. You have to change that. Well, I have a little more of a problem with that.
Yeah. Lennon, were you going to wade in on that? I don't want to force
you. There's no way.
I'm not touching that with a 10-foot pole. Yeah.
I think you're all having a great conversation around this. I don't much to add.
Thanks. No. I'm glad. There's one listener.
Well, we'll certainly find out, and I don't know, Craig, if this is on your script ahead or not, but we'll certainly find out as Dominion continues to make progress case against Fox Corporation. Limitations of corporate responsibility lie.
Yeah, let's jump into that. I didn't put that on my script, but the latest revelations about Rupert Murdoch's deposition. And the things that he's willing to permit and not permit, and I think the one quote that's just killer for Fox, bad for Fox, is the comment that it's not red or blue.
It's green.
It's green.
Yeah.
It's all about the money. Show me yes. the money. That's what we're going to be talking about here, and now he is talking about sort of token dismissals or reprimands or whatnot. But at the time, Maria Bartiromo and all of the rest of the crew, they kind of had free reign. There was rarely there any pushback.
I think the thing that you said the other day, Craig, is one of the things that I find fascinating, and that is that they have to show actual harm. in order to get the punitive damages. Isn't that what you were saying?
Well, no, what I was saying that is that they're going to have trouble establishing that their actual damages are $1.4 billion.
Right.
Most legal experts look at that case, that one and the parallel case by what's the name of the company that made the machines?
Dominion.
Smartmatic.
Smartmatic, yeah. Right. Theirs is for $2.6 billion or whatever. Or as Lennon used it, the technical term is a bazillion.
Yeah. That's right.
Yeah. My prediction on that one is that Fox will settle. They will write big checks, but they won't write $1.4 billion checks. Mm-hmm. But they will admit liability. If it goes to trial, it's going to go to trial on one issue and one issue only. It's going to be the amount of damages and whether or not Dominion and the plaintiffs can prove that they've actually suffered those damages. Kevin?
Yeah, well, and it'll be quite interesting to me to see to the extent Dominion agrees to a settlement or takes them to court. The commentary I've heard is that Dominion's pretty focused on getting into court. The other thing which I find tremendously ironic is that we've heard so many times in the previous administration when some bad actor has been found out, the typical response is, well, they didn't really work with us very often. I really don't know too much about that guy.
Yeah.
You know, I guess one bad actor got in. So sorry, you know. Well, now it's Murdoch when he's now referring to what probably formerly were known as anchors on his station are now being referred to by Mr. Murdoch as commentators, right. Presumably invited guests who really, you know, aren't really that closely affiliated with the corporation, right? They just sort of come on and say their thing. Yeah. These are the anchors of the shows on the nightly Fox broadcast. So, you know, Murdoch is trying to gain some separation. We'll see whether it's effective. But,
he has been able to, avoid trouble fairly successfully. We'll see what happens on this one. You know, even if Dominion settles on the issue of liability, they'd still have the opportunity to in the damage section to really make Fox look bad, to give them bad ink, as they say. So we shall see.
I find it interesting, though, that everyone is saying that Fox is not covering this at all. I mean, obviously that they wouldn't. But and so how many of their listeners are actually hearing this, you know, that these guys are making these comments?
Probably none.
Probably none.
Probably virtually none.
Yeah. Unless I write to my buddies and tell them.
Lennon?
Well, do it.
Well, and doesn't that just help them? Like, isn't that sort of the Fox formula? Like, mm-hmm. Make up controversy, cast us as the victim, as the people that's not fair. We are going to be the alter media people for the, you don't believe in big media, listen to Fox. It's kind of a good win for them.
You know, on a related subject, this Arizona attorney general who did the investigation into election fraud and then buried the report.
Yeah.
Which is extraordinary because now they have a different attorney general, and that attorney general, Democrat, said that they're going to refocus the work of the Arizona voter fraud unit to protect election workers from death threats and those sort of things. It just, you know, somebody characterized the big lie about there being all this fraud in the elections as becoming the big fraud. It's become the big fraud because it's... What was the figure I heard? 170 pieces of legislation in state legislations around the nation that are based on the proposition that there was fraud in the elections, when in fact there was virtually none. It's amazing. Yeah, Kevin.
Yeah, and I'll give a shout out to those activists. We were amongst them to identify Attorney General and Secretary of State races as being really important in the last election cycle. And we're looking at like Arizona, Georgia, Michigan, Nevada, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin. There were like four toss-up races in either Attorney General or Secretary of State. And we were able to hold three Democratic seats. We didn't lose a single Democratic seat. And we were able to flip the Secretary of State in Arizona, the state that you just mentioned, and the Attorney General race, I think, was pretty close there as well. So, you know, activists responded, and hopefully that's going to be a good indicator going forward of people who care about the systems. You know, voters should vote and votes should be counted, and fraud, it should be weeded out if it exists and not mentioned if it doesn't.
Good note to close on there, Kevin. Thank you. Hey, next week we'll hear from Small Talk guests Tom Dean and Daniel Batista. They're going to discuss the development of a Vashon sign to recognize the first people of Vashon Island. So for Lennon, Truman, Kevin, Bruce in absentia, and myself, I hope you'll join us next Tuesday for the next edition of the Brown Briefly.
See you then. Good to see you again, Lennon.
See you all. Thank you.
Bye now.